Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith, and Elliot Watson.
Hello and welcome to the Versus History Podcast. My guest today is best-selling author Liz Kessler, who's here to talk to us about her new historical fiction book, When the World Was Ours. Liz Kessler, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Now, let's get straight to the questions, if you don't mind. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your new book, When the World Was Ours, and why you chose to tell this story, or, as is actually the case in this book, these stories?
Yeah. So When the World Was Ours is a book that has been kind of I'd say brewing in the background of my brain for probably about 10 years. It was inspired by something that happened to my dad when he was a young boy. Jewish family, growing up in Vienna. It was 1934, and my dad was on a Danube steamer with his father. He was kneeling on his seat, my dad that is, not his father, and a lady came and sat down next to him. And my grandfather said to my dad, be careful you don't scuff the woman's dress with your feet, because he's kneeling, his feet were sticking out. And the woman said, don't worry, it's fine. And as a result, kind of got into conversation with my grandfather. I said, what a sweet boy my dad was. And it turned out that she and her husband, who she was with, both English, were there on a conference. So her husband was a dentist. Anyway, they got into such a conversation with my grandfather that they ended up realizing that the rest of their tour had left and they hadn't got off. So my grandfather said, look, I'll show you back to your hotel, but come and meet my wife, come and have her cake, we'll show you Vienna. And they had this lovely day, the next day together. So then Gladys and William Jones, then once they were back in England, sent a thank you letter to my grandparents. And that was the end of that. And then in 1938, when the Anschluss took place and Austria was annexed to Nazi Germany, my family had to get away, really. And they went to Czechoslovakia, because my grandfather was Czech. And a year later, less than a year later, in fact, when the Nazis came to Czechoslovakia too, their options were very limited. They ended up managing to get together everything they needed in order to get out of the country, apart from one thing, which was an affidavit for someone in another country. And they didn't know anybody until my grandfather came across this letter that they'd had from the Joneses 5 years ago now. And he wrote to them, and they wrote straight back, and they said, we'll do everything. And they did. They helped them to get the visas, they brought them to England, they brought them to live with them for 6 months, and they, undoubtedly saved their lives. Now, this story's always been in my mind for about the last decade. It's been in my thoughts in terms of the inspiration for a book. But I always wanted to tell not really just the story of my dad, even though it's an amazing story. I wanted to sort of look at it, like, as a writer, the thing that occupied my thoughts was, what if that moment had never happened? What if my dad had never knelt on that seat? We probably wouldn't be here. And, so it was looking at the other side, the shadows around the story, the other side of what if that had never happened. The story is told through three characters, and one of them is the story that closely follows what happened to my dad. And the others were the two other best friends who I kind of explored some of the answers to the questions I've been asking myself.
It's astonishing to me that the lives of people and also history itself can turn on such small and seemingly insignificant events like a child scuffing a lady's dress. Now, the intertwined narratives of the three children in the book, Leo, Max, and Elsa, they are set against the Nazi occupation of Europe and the Holocaust. How did you find writing about the horrors of this period of history through the eyes of young children?
Yeah, I mean, just to pick up on the first thing you said there, the idea of our lives turning in such big ways on such tiny moments is something that's always fascinated me. And in fact, I'd never really realised until there was a book I wrote about 10 years ago, which is a time slip book where there's a girl who has to try and get back to this moment and change it. And it was then that I realised that actually possibly my fascination with this idea is because it's kind of in my DNA, really, that's you know, what happened to my family and why I'm here and where we all come from, my heritage, I suppose. In terms of the, you know, the narratives of the three children, so Leo's story is the one that closely follows my dad's. Elsa is a Jewish girl who, I suppose her story answers the question, what if that moment had never happened? Because for her, it doesn't. And Max, the third best friend, is not Jewish and finds himself being drawn towards the Hitler Youth and following the ideals of the Nazi movement. And including his character was something that kind of made me quite nervous. But as soon as I thought of it, I knew I had to, because as well as asking the question, what if this moment had never happened to my dad, I also wanted to explore what if, you know, these children were innocent, but my book starts in 1936 and the three of them are about 9 years old. And I wanted to explore the idea of the innocent children who could have been pulled just as easily in one direction or another, and how on earth could seemingly good, normal, ordinary people be drawn towards the horrific regime of the Nazis. So you ask about writing the horrors of the period through the eyes of young children. And, you know, there were lots of balancing acts for me. The idea of telling the story through the eyes of young children is partly because I write books for young children. And I think I spend quite a lot of my time viewing the world, events, feelings, all sorts of things through the eyes of young children, or at least through the potential feelings of children. So I'm quite used to doing that, and it feels like a way that I want to see the world. And also, you know, I'm used to writing for this readership. I've written for young people for about 20 years now, so that's naturally where I find myself going. But it does mean having to, you know, there's always decisions that you have to make. And with this book, more than any other, there's decisions to be made, and there's a balance to a very fine balance to tread between being honest and respectful to history and not traumatizing young people. So that was, you know, there was lots of very difficult decisions and things that really were quite agonizing for me to figure out as I went along. So it was tough. It was really tough. You know, it's not easy to write about that period. It wasn't easy to research it. In a way, when I came to the writing, I'd done so much research, the writing was almost a cathartic experience for me. But I feel like there were certain things about the book that enabled me to go into it in a slightly more, I suppose, in a way more removed, you know, telling Max's story, I told his in the third person rather than the first person, like Leo and Elsa. And in a way that gave me a tiny bit of distance. There's lots of reasons why I did that, but I think for myself as a writer, it made it almost easier to distance myself slightly from what I was writing about. But yeah, it involved lots of very careful thought and lots of pinpoint decisions, really.
Speaking of decisions, your story starts in 1936 at a time when Hitler would have been ordering his troops to remilitarize the Rhineland in direct contravention of the Treaty of Versailles. What was your reason for starting here rather than at another time? Was it in order for you to get or to access the youth, the incredible youth of the children at that point in their lives, as you said, at age nine?
Yeah, I think that, like I've always believed as a writer, from the point of view of storytelling, I think it's important to get into a story quite quickly. As a reader, I mean, I like books that grab me straight away. If a book hasn't grabbed me fairly early on, then I tend to find it hard to give it, you know, my attention span, especially over this last year, has been not fantastic. And I think, you know, as a storyteller, I think it's good to jump straight in. But I also think that you have to set the scene to a certain extent. And in order to get a sense of the horrors that were to come and a sense of what was taken away from the children, I felt that it was very important to establish what they did have to begin with. I didn't want to go back as far as my own dad's story started, which was 1934, because I think that would have meant too many years of building up before things really happened. But equally, I didn't want to start in 1938 or 1939 when we were already really in there. So I felt that starting in 1936 was the right point for the kind of shadows of Nazism to be starting to take hold in a very real way, but still allowing the children to have a few happy, innocent days before things took a nosedive.
And take a nosedive, it certainly does. I think one of the things I found when reading the book was exactly what you were just saying, was that almost immediately, as you begin reading the book, the foreshadowing, the clouds in the background are there in 1936. And I think that's one of the wonderful things, or the horrific or the terrible things about starting in 1936, is because you know that you have these children that are just about to become or just about to find themselves in the vice grip of the Nazi domination of Europe. Now, here at Versus History, we find the intersection between historical reality and fiction extraordinarily interesting. Were there any concerns you had when it came to building a series of fictional characters and interactions around the core of a true story, your father's, and within the context of World War II?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there were so many things that took an awful lot of thought and conversations as well. Like my dad actually does talks. He works with the Holocaust Educational Trust, and he goes into schools and he gives talks about his life and his experience. And he's one of the few people who are still alive today who did survive the Holocaust in one way or another, whether that was turning them into a refugee like it did with my father, or surviving concentration camps, or any other way. But my dad had always, I'd always known there was this story. My father had actually said to me quite a few times, "Oh, what, you're the writer of the family. Why don't you write a book about it?" And actually, I'd always said to my dad, that your story isn't the story I want to tell. I am a writer. I write novels. I write fiction. And I had to figure out for myself what the fictional story was that I wanted to do. I always knew that I wanted it to be in some way something to do with what if that moment had never happened. And it's weird. When my dad first read it, he said, he was quite touched actually by how much Leo's story did resemble his. And in a way, it's completely different. Leo does have a similar moment. His is on the Reisenrad Ferris wheel in Vienna, where my dad was on a Danube steamer. But there's still a letter, and the letter still leads to the escape, and they're still coming to England. But there are lots of things that are different. So, and Max and Elsa's stories are, the characters are completely fictional. So I was starting with, other than my father's inspiration for the story, it was definitely fictional characters, and I was writing a story. But at the same time, from day one, from even before day one of writing this book, it's always been important to me that I am truthful and respectful to the events. So it was a case of the backdrop being extremely realistic and trying and doing as much research as I could possibly do to ensure that it was authentic, but allowing myself to tell a fictional story within that. And, this was a big departure for me. I've for 20 years, I've written books about mermaids and fairies and time travel and pirate dogs and things that, to be fair, people can't really come along and tell me I got wrong. If somebody says, oh, that's not how I imagine mermaids to be, well, that's fine. They can't tell me I've definitely got mermaids wrong. They can't tell me I've definitely got time travel wrong, because as far as we know, it doesn't exist. But I've always known that with this, I didn't want to run the risk that people could say to me, you've got your facts wrong. So I did everything I could to check that I got it right. But within that, create a fictional story. Again, another big challenge of writing it, I guess.
Speaking of fiction, what are your thoughts about the recent conversations, some of them quite heated, about the responsibilities of those who create art or entertainment to accurately depict historical truth? I'm thinking of the recent conversations around the Crown television series, the film Green Book, and such things.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the discussions around the Crown, for example, have only really become big discussions with the latest, with season four, haven't they? We've come very much into the present day. I mean, we say very much into the present day, most of it's in the 80s, but it's now, the latest season is in the era that is in our consciousness very strongly. And I think that's what makes the difference. The previous, as far as I'm aware, there was never quite as much talk about this in the first three seasons of The Crown. And I think maybe because it was that much more removed. Whereas now we're talking, you know, most adults remember where they were when they heard that, you know, Princess Diana had died and things like that. So things that are within the common collective consciousness, I suppose, are a little bit harder and, you know, going to create a bit more heat in those conversations. So, yeah, I think the conversations are taking place. It does affect it. You know, I watch The Crown and I go online to read websites that are fact-checking what I've just watched in a fictional programme. It's, you know, it's quite mind-bending when you think about it. But I, you know, and I can't speak for the producers of those programmes, but all I can say is that with my book, I did everything I possibly could so that anybody who questions me about it wouldn't really have any opportunities to say, why did you present these facts in this way when they didn't happen in that way? Because I've done everything I can to ensure that I have got the facts correctly. And again, with those programs, they are involving real people, many of whom are alive today, whereas mine are fictional people within a factual setting. So yeah, it's quite different. But you know, I think the conversations are good. If these programs and these books create those conversations, then I think it's healthy debate.
I couldn't agree more. I don't know about you, but I seem to feel that at least in the last few years, history's been moving so quickly. Would you say that the decision to write about your father's lucky escape from the clutches of rabid anti-Semitism in Nazi-occupied Europe was in any way influenced by what's been going on recently globally, the recent rise in nationalism, anti-globalization, political populism and racism?
100%, absolutely, yeah. That was another thing over the years of this book kind of simmering in the background that's occupied my thoughts. I'm old enough to have done O-levels, not GCSEs, and I got an E in my history. I'm really sorry. I hope that's not made listeners switch off. But I wasn't very good at history. I never thought of myself as being that interested in history. I've certainly never written a historical book, and I didn't want this book to be a history book. I always wanted it to be current day. You know, I have an awareness of and feelings about social and political situations today. And it always felt extremely important, right up there in my high priorities with this book, that it would be something that young people would read and that hopefully they could reflect on its relevance today. And, you know, you'll know if you've read the book that from the last chapter that there's a sense of passing on that baton of history to young people today. To take if they want to, and to ask themselves, you know, how are these stories relevant to me today? And which side of history do I want to be on? So yes, absolutely. It's always been at the heart of me wanting to write this book is about making it something that feels like it could contribute to conversations about the state of the world today and hopefully make young people think about their place in that world and where they want their place to be.
Well, I think, as you mentioned, the final chapter, where there is most certainly a degree of optimism after what I hope the listeners don't, or I hope you don't mind me saying, is quite a tragic, obviously a tragic book. It's about the Holocaust. But I do feel that there's that redemptive ending with, as you say, the baton being passed on. Now, my penultimate question is a little bit circuitous. I hope you don't mind. I hope you can indulge me on this question. If I had watched a film version of your book before reading your notes from the author, I would almost certainly have arrived at the conclusion that the chance encounter that Leo and his father has with Mr. and Mrs. Stewart, and then the subsequent letter that helps lead to salvation from the Nazis, must be a MacGuffin to drive the plot. Now, the fact that this is entirely true is both staggering and wonderful. Now, does your family still have this letter?
Yeah, they do. My dad has the letter. And I mean, I know what you're saying. I've thought many times over the last year and the things that have happened in the world, well, the last 4 or 5 years, but increasingly and acceleratingly so, if I was to submit current world events to my editor as a first draft of a novel, then they probably have sent it back to me and said, this is ridiculous. Brexit, Trump, global pandemic, riots storming the Capitol. This is ridiculous, Liz. You can choose one of these things. You can't have all of them. And, you know, I think quite often, you know, there are things where, real life can feel more incredible than fiction. I do actually know several people, many Jewish people, who have similar tiny moments or miraculous things that occurred in order to get them out of Nazi-occupied countries and to England and to still be alive, you know, 2-3 generations on. So yes, it happened. And yes, my dad still has the letter and I have a copy of it too. And it's incredible, yeah. I mean, just to have these documents, these records. He has a yellow star that my great-grandmother was wearing when my grandfather found her still alive in Theresienstadt at the end of the war.
That is astonishing.
That's another astonishing story that you would, again, you'd think, oh, come on, that's really... But life is full of these moments. And, you know, thankfully, one of those moments occurred to my dad.
Well, hopefully we can have plenty more of those moments, or hopefully we won't need plenty more of those moments in the future. Now, but this is my final question, if you don't mind, Liz. Now, I think you've answered it in part. But now that your book is out, When the World Was Ours, what are your hopes for it?
I have several hopes, I suppose. There are, of course, the very self-indulgent ones, like it'll be picked up by Spielberg or someone like that, and they'll make a big movie of it.
I hope so.
But actually, the real, real hopes are to imagine it being discussed in a classroom full of, 14, 15-year-olds, I guess, would be ideally for me. Discussing it passionately, thinking about it. The thought that this book might be something that could make young people think about, you know, you can't moralize, you can't tell people what to think, especially young people. But if this book made young people just read it and think about the things that it brings up and just ask themselves questions, like I said earlier, where do I see myself in this? How would I like to see myself? And just to open up those questions for young people and be part of a conversation that might help encourage this generation of young people to grow up with perhaps more kindness, perhaps more empathy, then that's job done as far as I'm concerned. And on another level, I just hope that people will absorb it, get wrapped up in it, have an emotional experience and connection with it, and not be too angry with me for making them cry.
Which I did. I think we could do with more kindness and empathy in the world. Liz Kessler, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the Versus History podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.